Today is Valentine's Day, February 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. Coming up, a Philippine journalist takes on President Rodrigo Duterte.
My stay last night at the NBI really made me think about what this is all about, right? And for me, it's about two things: abuse of power and weaponization of the law.
Also ahead, U.S. and Chinese representatives continue trade talks in Beijing as March 1st deadline nears. And the U.S. is hosting a Middle East conference in Poland with a focus on countering Iran's influence. Today marks the one-year anniversary of the mass shooting at a high school in Parkland, Florida. In the U.S. House of Representatives, Congressman Ted Deutch led a moment of silence yesterday to remember the event that happened in his district.
17 people were killed in a senseless and horrific act of gun violence at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School.
17 people were also injured when former student Nicholas Cruz opened fire with a semi-automatic weapon. Some of the survivors of the shooting and parents of the victims now lead a movement to bring attention to gun violence in the U.S. and call for new gun control measures. Yesterday, a House of Representatives committee approved legislation that would require background checks for all gun sales or transfers. However, similar bills have failed to gain enough support to pass the full Congress. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer began their trade talks with top Chinese officials today in Beijing. They met with Chinese Vice Premier Liu He, the top economic advisor to Chinese President Xi Jinping. Negotiators are pushing to meet a March 1st deadline for a deal. The talks continue tomorrow after 3 days of deputy-level meetings to work out technical details. The Wall Street Journal reported today that China is proposing to buy $200 billion in semiconductors over 6 years. U.S. tariffs on $200 billion worth of imports from China are to rise to 25% from 10% if the two sides can't reach a deal. Bloomberg News has reported that President Donald Trump is considering to move back the deadline by 60 days to give negotiators more time to make a deal. The Chinese government reported that China's imports rose by 9% compared with the same time last year. China's trade surplus with the U.S. decreased in January, although its imports from the U.S. also declined. At least 10 soldiers have been killed and 30 others wounded in a bomb attack on a paramilitary convoy on a key highway in Indian-controlled Kashmir, security officials say. U.S. President Mike Pence is in Europe and is urging allies to withdraw from a nuclear weapons treaty with Iran. Tensions appear to be resurfacing between Russia and Turkey just hours into a three-way summit on the Syrian conflict being hosted in the Black Sea resort of Sochi. A Russian government spokesman said Russia has told Turkey it lacked power to create a safe zone inside Syria without the permission of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on voanews.com and on your VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. This week, the leaders of Catalonia's independence movement went on trial. They face up to 25 years in jail if found guilty of the rebellion charges against them. The semi-autonomous Catalonia region, whose capital is Barcelona, attempted to declare independence from Spain in 2017, but Madrid imposed direct rule and arrested its political leaders. As Henry Ridgewell reports, the trials risk reopening wounds that threaten to tear Spain apart, and the prospect of an imminent snap election is adding to the tensions.
In the dock, 12 leaders of Catalonia's independence movement charged with sedition and rebellion. Prosecutor Javier Zaragoza gave his opening statement Wednesday. He said political activity can never justify the use of thousands of citizens in order to prevent compliance with laws and judicial decisions. Defense lawyer Olivier Peter says democracy itself is at stake.
This is a political trial. The accusation is based on political facts, not criminal facts. We think that organizing a referendum is not a crime, can't be a crime in a democracy.
Outside the courthouse, supporters of the accused gathered to demand the release of what they call political prisoners. Nearby, separated by police lines, groups of anti-independence, pro-Spanish demonstrators chanted terrorists and demanded maximum jail sentences for the suspects. The 12 men include some politicians and some civil leaders.
La decisión.
Professor of Constitutional Law Ernesto Pascual says the trial's verdict will circle around the issue of whether there was violence or whether there was no violence. The referendum was held in October 2017. Police attempted to block people from voting and seized ballot papers. Protests descended into violence. Weeks later, Catalan leaders declared independence from Spain. Madrid declared the vote illegal and imposed direct rule on the semi-autonomous region, arresting its leaders. Former President Carlos Puigdemont fled to Belgium. Regional elections failed to end the standoff. Now, the growing likelihood of a snap general election is firing up the political debate, says Camino Mortera Martinez of the Centre for European Reform, who spoke to VOA via Skype from Brussels.
We are seeing a revival of that debate and the discussion on the Spanish identity and what it means to be Spanish as opposed to what it means to be Catalan, if one can say so. And this is partially because the right-wing parties at the moment have decided to make identity a lightning rod of their campaign.
The far-right Vox Party has gained votes on the back of its vehement opposition to Catalan independence. Analysts say the trials will do little to solve the political crisis. A guilty verdict could drive deeper divisions. But if the accused are found innocent, analysts say separatists could be encouraged to make another push for independence. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
An award-winning Philippine journalist and founder of an online news site has been critical of President Rodrigo Duterte, was freed on bail today after being arrested on charges of libel. Maria Ressa serves as the chief editor of the site Rappler. Ressa's arrest yesterday is believed to be linked to a 2012 report about a businessman suspected of having ties to a judge on the Philippines' highest court. She was jailed overnight. After her release, she spoke to reporters.
My stay last night at the NBI really made me think about what this is all about, right? And for me, it's about two things: abuse of power and weaponization of the law. This isn't just about me, and it's not just about Rappler. The message that the government is sending is very clear, and someone actually told our reporter this last night: be silent or you're next.
The government says the arrest is a normal answer to a complaint. However, the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines condemned it as persecution. The Duterte government has cracked down on other media critics and lawmakers who oppose the president's deadly anti-drug campaign. The United States clashed with Iran in the international arena on Tuesday. The U.S. is hosting a Middle East conference in Poland with a focus on countering Iran's influence. An international court based in the Netherlands ruled Tuesday that Iran can proceed with a bid to unfreeze assets in the United States. VOA's Zlatica Hoc reports.
French-based group National Council of Resistance in Iran joins high-ranking officials from about 60 countries for a two-day conference in Warsaw. The United States is represented by Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and President Donald Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani.
In order to have peace and security in the Middle East, there has to be a major change in the theocratic dictatorship in Iran. It must end, and end quickly, in order to have peace and stability.
Iran has just marked the 40th anniversary of a revolution that brought to power religious leaders. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Tuesday stressed the importance of the participation of Arab countries at the conference.
What is important about this meeting, and this meeting is not in secret because there are many of those, is that this is an open meeting with representatives of leading Arab countries that are sitting down together with Israel in order to advance the common interest of war with Iran.
Iran's foreign minister accused the United States of pressuring other countries to attend the conference.
They use their money, they use their influence, they use the military might of the United States, they use the leverages that they have with various countries in order to attract more people to this conference. And many people who are going there have told us that we don't have any other choice.
Some political observers say Poland's close ties with Washington may risk its relations with other countries. European Union Foreign Affairs Chief Federica Mogherini is not attending the meeting, but some member nations have sent their representatives. China, Russia, Lebanon, and the Palestinians are staying away too. Tehran scored a point against Washington Tuesday when the Hague-based International Court of Justice ruled in favor of Iran, letting it proceed with a bid to unfreeze assets in the United States. Washington has tried to halt the case, citing Tehran's alleged support for international terrorism. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
A judge in Kenya has found five top police commanders culpable for the death of a six-month-old in 2017. The little girl died as police tried to control election-related protests in western Kenya. The country's director of public prosecutions may now file charges against the commanders. Rael Ombor has more from Nairobi.
Magistrate Beryl Omolo ruled that the five commanders are culpable for the death of Samantha Pendo. Pendo was a six-month-old girl killed in August 2017 as police tried to quell protests in western Kenya after President Uhuru Kenyatta was named the winner of the country's presidential election. Witnesses said anti-riot police stormed into the home of Joseph Abanja and Lensa Achieng in the town of Nyalenda and clobbered baby Samantha on the head. She died while undergoing medical treatment. The public prosecutor's office ordered an inquest after investigations by Kenya's Independent Policing Oversight Authority failed to determine who killed the little girl. Omolo read out her decision in court Thursday.
I have evaluated the entire evidence as presented before me, and I'm satisfied that the deceased baby Samantha Pendo did not die as a result of natural consequences, but due to severe head injury caused by blunt force trauma inflicted on her by members of the National Police Service.
The magistrate also ordered the director of the Public Prosecution's Office to investigate 31 more officers who might be linked to Pendo's death. Pendo's mother, Lensa Achieng, spoke to VOA after the decision.
Today I'm happy at least some people have been held responsible, even if they didn't find the culprit. At least the police officers, some of them have been held responsible for what happened to my daughter. It should be a lesson, even if election is being held, let nobody shed blood because of elections. Elections come and they go.
According to a 2017 report by Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, at least 33 people were killed by police as they protested the outcome of Kenya's general elections. Demas Kiprono is Amnesty International's campaign manager for safety and dignity. He said today's ruling supports the group's previous findings.
This means that indeed atrocities happened during our last elections, and we need to come up with elaborate steps to ensure police accountability so that whenever they're interacting with members of the public in any situation, that they are guided by their standing orders and international human rights law regarding the use of force and policing assemblies.
The courts have forwarded Pendo's case to the public prosecutor's office for a decision on what charges the police commanders might face. The timing and seriousness of the charges are still to be determined. Raya Lumbur for VOA News, Nairobi.
Insects are the most biodiverse group of living things on the planet, and it is a good thing there are so many of them, because they are responsible for many of the fundamental processes that allow life on Earth, from pollination to decomposition. But a new report suggests they are disappearing, and that could be catastrophic. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
A new review of over 70 studies of insect populations suggests that human pressures are causing insect populations to plummet by as much as a quarter every decade. Max Barclay is an entomologist at London's Natural History Museum.
Some of my colleagues have compared it to playing Jenga. You know, you remove pieces from the Jenga tower and everything seems to be okay. And then you remove one piece and the whole thing falls down. And you don't know which piece in advance that's going to be. And once you've removed it, you can't put it back again. So the loss of species is inevitably concerning because often we don't know what those species are doing. We don't know what other species are depending on them.
Insects make up the largest class of animals on Earth and represent more than half of all known living organisms. They are incredibly diverse and in many ways make life on Earth possible. Bees and butterflies pollinate our food, flowers, and trees. They feed all kinds of larger animals, including humans, and insects play a vital role in the decomposition of all kinds of organic matter, from leaves to roadkill. Their collapse is being driven by human activity, everything from traffic to industrial farming and pesticides to light pollution. Scientists like Mark Wright with the World Wildlife Fund say doing nothing to solve the problem is not an option.
And a large number of the crops we eat and rely on are pollinated by insects. So imagine a world where that pollination process is not taking place. And there are some cases already around the world where we are having to pollinate by hand at huge cost, at huge economic cost, simply because the insects aren't there to do the work that we would normally ask them to do for free. And in some cases, if you're talking about food crops, just try and imagine the scale of what that would look like if insects weren't doing that for us.
One big caveat, all of the studies come from industrialized countries in Europe and North America. The researchers say they simply don't have the data to census the robust insect species in more tropical regions. But in these industrialized countries, the report predicts that all insect species could be gone in a century. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You are listening to International Edition.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the results of the February 16th Nigerian presidential and National Assembly elections. What concerns and issues swayed the voters the most? An in-depth discussion on the Nigerian elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
It may sound unpleasant to some of you, but edible insects are a great source of high-quality protein and essential minerals such as calcium and iron. Edible grubs, insect larvae, offer all that plus high-quality fat, which is good for the brain. Insects are part of the diet in many parts of the world, but not in the U.S., where bug phobias mean insect dishes are extremely rare. But that's starting to change, and some steps are so small they are micro-sized. From Denver, Colorado, Shelley Schlender reports.
A metal latch creaks as Wendy Lou McGill opens a shipping container in a Denver, Colorado suburb. She steps into a boxcar-sized room that's lined with shelves of shallow white bins. Whirring machines keep the temperature around 26 degrees Celsius at 80% humidity. That's just right for McGill's tiny livestock. Mealworms.
Rocky Mountain Micro Ranch is Colorado's first and only edible insect farm. We raise crickets and mealworms to sell to restaurants and food manufacturers.
Feeding the world's appetite for protein through beef and even chicken is unsustainable, according to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization. Protein from bugs is more doable. McGill grows nearly 275 kilos of insects every month, feeding them beer mash and grain. A carrot supplies their water needs. Each mealworm is about half the size of your pinky. Thousands of them curl and wriggle in each shallow bin.
I want to be part of trying to figure out how to feed ourselves better as we have less land and water and a hotter planet and more people to feed.
Visiting the micro ranch today are Terry Kohling and his grandchildren.
What's that? The buds, the water buds.
Andrew is almost five and Zora is nearly three. Like most Americans, they have never, ever eaten a bug and don't really want to.
I don't think they are very appealing as far as something you put in your mouth. And you see them around dead things, and it just doesn't appeal to me to eat something that seems to be so wild.
But another visitor is already a fan of using grubs for a grub.
I'm Amy Franklin, and I'm founder of a nonprofit called Farms for Orphans. And what we do is farm bugs for food, because in other countries where we work, they're really, really popular food.
Franklin works in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In its markets, vendors sell platters of live wild-caught crickets plus big bowls of pulsating African palm weevil larvae, with each wriggly grub the size of a grown-up's thumb. These wild insects are only plentiful in special seasons. Franklin says the orphanages grow palm weevil larvae year-round, in shipping containers.
Most of the orphanages don't own any land. There really is no opportunity for them to grow a garden or to raise chickens. Insects are a protein source that they can grow in a very small space.
Andrew and Zora are still unsure. To get them a little more used to the idea of insect protein, McGill brings out a small bowl filled with mealworms that have been baked until crisp, then sprinkled with salt.
Can I just taste one?
Yeah, one, totally. It's really crispy and salty.
Tastes kind of crunchy and kind of yummy.
Bugs also taste yummy at Linger, a Denver restaurant where saucepans sizzle as Chef Sean Bruno prepares gourmet grubs.
We do black ants and sesame seeds with crickets mixed in with the green tea soba noodles, and then we garnish with chapulín crickets.
Culinary director Jeremy Kittleson says Linger is committed to changing the American palate.
As much as we love beef, there's no scientist, there's no environmentalist that's going to tell you cattle farming is a sustainable practice. We should eat more insects.
As his grandchildren watch, skeptically, Kohling samples the cricket soba noodle dish. With a surprised look of delight, he says he even likes the crickets.
Kind of like a hard raisin. The seasoning's great.
Amy Franklin gives a toast with a forkful of noodles and crickets.
Cricket? Bug appetite?
Over 2 billion people worldwide eat insects. Slowly, Americans are adding to that number. Shelley Schlender for VOA News, Denver, Colorado.
You have been listening to International Edition. We hope you had a warm and wonderful Valentine's Day and ate bugs only if you wanted to. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and engineer, Aiden Utku. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr. in Washington. Enjoy your day.